Hey, everyone. So I was thinking about what I want to share on the topic of my own story, because I've discovered through ACA that there's value in our stories, not so much to harp on them or to live in the past, but to learn from them, and in so doing, grow from them. So I have discovered through ACA much more clarity, because I'm beginning to understand what happened in the past and how much it colors how I see life in the present. And so this message of recovery for me has been incredibly valuable. My life has changed so much. So let me tell you a little bit about my past. I was born in Montreal. I'm a Canadian. I was born the youngest of five kids, two girls, three boys. My mother was extremely codependent. Her goal in life was really about being needed. And so her style of doing life was constantly in relation to care for others, care for children, care for husband. And it manifested very often in a way that was about fear and control. So very often she showed up from a modeling perspective as a mother that modeled a relationship that was about go find a project to fix. Be sure that you put a lot of energy into that project that is your relationship, and let them know they're doing it wrong. And a father that was emotionally unavailable, who drank quite a lot, who was an example of brush it off, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and nothing should really bother you, and let's just move on. Let's not see that elephant in the room. There were a number of key moments in my childhood that really had a big impact. And for a long time, to be honest, I really didn't think that I fit in the recovery community. I didn't feel like I was an alcoholic. I didn't feel like I had drug addictions, and I didn't, and I still don't. I don't have addictions towards that. But I do have addictions towards excitement, towards control. I use food to deal with emotional distress. But for a long time, I felt like I'm not sure this is the right place for me. It made it harder for me when I walked into my first 12-step meeting and the word God kept coming up. And my mother, being a devout Catholic, put a lot of energy into literally dragging the five of us to church, even on pain of being chucked into the car, which I was on several occasions, which, of course, is a big turnoff for kids. Who wants to be forced to go to church? Here I am sitting in a 12-step meeting thinking this is not going to work out for me, because this God thing, I mean, that was a whole pain and getcha God. And I mean, that those phrases were used in my childhood, like God will make you pay for this. And, I still remember my sister quite young got pregnant, and my mother, her statement was so angry. She said, "What you do to me will be visited upon you tenfold." And I remember standing in the room thinking, wow, I mean, my sister's so scared and upset. And, the best my mother could do was to pull out the... So there was my sister who was a sexual abuse survivor in my family. Her version of how to do life was to go find boyfriends, because that apparently is how you get, love and, right, we confuse love and sex. We really want love, but we'll accept sex. So my sister would date older men, and one night, it was a winter's night, and we shared a bed that awakened me. And my sister, having not even taken off her winter coat yet, came storming into the bedroom. Right on the heels were my parents. And they were arguing because my sister had disobeyed my father because she was dating an older man. And he was, and she said, yeah, I was. And she did it, fell over on top of me. What they wanted, and how do I want to show up in this relationship so that the giants don't kill me? And that's where my people pleasing was born as well, right? How do I keep you happy? How do I make sure that I shift how I show up in a relationship so that I'm safe? And so there was a lot of chameleon stuff going on in my life. What do you want me to be? What do you want me to say? Particularly, what do you want me to say so that I'm of value? Because of value means being kept around, right? So let me stick with my childhood for a moment. So in the moment that my father punched my sister, my big brother came upstairs and said, did he hit you? And called the cops, and he got kicked out. And the next day my sister left, and the oddest thing happened over the next several days. No one talked about it. There was no discussion. There was no, Nance, how are you feeling about that? Or, that must be really hard. You lost your roommate, Nance. And there was just, it was like, we're having spaghetti for dinner. I was like, what? And that kind of thing was pretty typical in my family. Our pet cat got really ill one night, and I remember my parents got a box and put a blanket and took the cat a while, and they came back with an empty box and the blanket and sort of threw it beside the door and came in and made dinner. And I was in the exact same headspace. What happened? Where's the cat? That happened a number of times in my life, that concept of something would happen, but there wouldn't be a discussion about it. That's just what happened. We don't need to discuss it. Let's move on. Let's brush it under the carpet. And I know for my own part, I've learned that lesson as well, that concept. So let's change the subject. I learned that well from my family of origin. So some other things that happened is, you know, one of my brothers rolled the car, I remember my father sort of had this look on his face like, well, that's bad. We should probably call the insurance. And I'm sure he was upset, but you wouldn't know it to talk to him about it, because that would have been an emotional outburst. My other brother got into a really bad bike accident, and he came home after going to the hospital because he was just so marred with, you know, all sorts of scrapes and scratches across his face, and was sitting on the couch. And I went over to sit beside him and asked him how he was, and tried and true to my family, he said, oh, I'm okay. And it was a pretty serious bike accident. I mean, he went flying into a ditch, and he was really, really ripped up. But that's sort of the downplay concept in my family. What's the big deal? I mean, Heather's not here anymore. My sister leaves. My brother gets kicked out. The cops get called. Let's not talk about that. So there's lots of family secrets that are all about this concept of downplay and sweep under carpet. There weren't a sharing words, I love you, or great job, or I'm so proud of you. Mistakes were not allowed. If the feeling was that you could have done better, you should have done better. So shame was a really big motivator, and a really sad motivator for me, from the perspective of, what do you mean you only got an A? Why didn't you get an A+? And then I remember thinking to myself, oh, you're right. That isn't good enough. It's not good enough. Right. And so, you know, I started to coin the phrase that I come from a family of judgment, criticism, and blame. That has a lot to do with my inner critic, that sense of, you know, I can do 500 things, sort of a phrase I've got in my head, you know, I could clean up my room and do my homework and get an A, and there's going to be something wrong, and I'm just waiting to be shamed about it. And so I would often try to over...
Hey, Nancy, so sorry to interrupt.
And really got into drugs and alcohol because he could not withstand. Yeah.
Sorry, the audio is cutting in and out. But sometimes if you stop your video, then you have more bandwidth and we'll hear the audio more clearly. That might work. And then you could turn your video back on after. Awesome. Thank you. We want to hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
How's that work?
Yes, that's coming in more clear.
Does Thank that seem so better?
It seems to be a little better, yeah.
Oh, thanks for telling me, Patrick. I appreciate it. Okay. All right. So, I mean, there were other things that happened in childhood. I remember being picked up and thrown into the wall by my brother who was babysitting, and he was frustrated because, you know, he's in charge and I wanted to do what I always do on Sunday nights and watch Disney. And he decided to change the rules, and I don't like it when people change the rules. So I said, no, mom and dad say I'm allowed to, etc. And he picked me up and threw me into a wall, and I went to bed. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to my parents about it, and they went, oh. And then I never heard anything more. Still to this day, I just don't know what happened. So suffice it to say, the sense of embracing emotions is not something I learned in my childhood. That sense of it's okay to make a mistake, no, it's not. It's not okay. There will be shame that follows mistakes. Keeping secrets, sweeping things under the carpet, you know, what was modeled for me in relationships, that concept of go find a project, someone to fix, and then nag them to change, to become something that I need them to become so that I feel good about them and I feel confident in our relationship. And so for a long time, I dated alcoholics. And I'm a lesbian, so the women that I dated were so often emotionally unavailable projects for me. I'm like, and it's interesting because it was attractive, right? It was familiar. It's my family of origin. Wow, you're emotionally unavailable, dysfunctional. This is perfect. And it's interesting because for years, I kept scratching my head wondering, why do I don't even notice that they're alcoholic. How does this happen? I don't get it. It would be like a year into the relationship and I'd say, wow, they're an alcoholic. Oh my God. I didn't even realize because I was so blind to, the depth of denial was really deep. So, you know, my strategy was go find somebody to fix, because I couldn't fix it in my childhood. So I'll fix it in my adult life. I'll go find somebody who's emotionally unavailable. I'll let them know they're doing it wrong because I got my superhero cape on now and I got to tell them how to fix their life, codependence. And I'll really berate them and let them know this is just a mistake. How's the vocals now, guys? I just got a note about my internet connection being unstable. You okay? Yeah. Okay. So relationship after relationship was somebody that was emotionally unavailable, alcoholic, drug addict. For a while there, I seemed to be on a streak of pathological liars. I don't know what that was about either. So it really was relationships that got me into recovery. That was the heart of the reason I got into recovery. I had a dinner party. A friend of mine who had been in recovery for 30 plus years stayed behind to help me clean up. And we talked in the kitchen, and I told her my story of the last several years and many relationships. And she said, have you ever heard of Al-Anon? And I said, no. Okay. Have you ever heard of ACA? And I said, no. And it was within days that I walked into a meeting, and I was petrified. I was like, wow, all these people are sharing really intimate details about their life. And I love them all. feeling uncomfortable about the whole God thing, and then, you know, was reminded it's a higher power of my own understanding. And things started to shift. And it's almost like this, it was like a breaking apart. Little pieces of dysfunction started to fall away, and I started to see them. I started to realize that I was looking for relationships because I needed a project, because that's what was modeled for me. I started to realize I was attracted to chaos, and I was attracted to what my mother and father modeled for me, my sense of codependence up against an emotionally unavailable alcoholic. I started to realize how I was using manipulation. I never saw it before. I, you know, there was one relationship that I was so desperate to hang on to that I claimed, and looking back on it, it wasn't even true, but I claimed, I'm getting to the point where I'm suicidal. You just have to make these changes because I can't take it anymore. And, you know, I need you to do these things. Otherwise, I'm just going to take my own life. And it was a manipulation. It was another example of what was modeled for me in my childhood. I started hearing people being really vulnerable and honest in meetings, and it helped me understand what it really meant to share from the heart, to share from a place of truth, of real intimacy, right? Intimacy. And as I continued going to both Al-Anon and ACA meetings and found a sponsor, I started to understand that it didn't, as my sponsor said, you need to fire your mother's God and create a higher power of your own understanding. And so from that higher power, for me, it's the higher power is the image of the Buddha. So my higher power, like I go bike riding and I take my higher power with me. Like the Buddha's like pushing if I'm going uphill. I have these little conversations with the Buddha. Is everything okay for audio? Yeah. Okay. And then I started to develop faith, you know, that sense of, I have a lot of fear about, shame breeds a lot of fear. And as I started to really have a relationship with my inner child and develop that relationship, and I had no idea what that even meant. Like, who is that? And, you know, it's that 8-year-old that watched my sister get punched in the face, you know, and she's funny and creative and hardworking, and she's really neat to hang out with. And I abandoned her over and over again in relationships in order to hold on to those relationships, right? What I needed on me, then, you know what? I got to just figure out how to keep inside this relationship because I can't let go. It's too hard. So I spent a lot of time in sort of this utter sense of pain and fear and need for control. And I start going to meetings and I realize my part in it. You know, because I was deeply entrenched in victim mentality, right? And I could spin a victim story like nobody. And so the villains were all around me, according to my story. And it was recovery that gave me perspective. And that perspective was born from faith. It was born from an understanding that feelings are not something that you shove under the carpet. They are to be tended to. They're to be honored, right? It's about saying to my inner child, oh, honey, of course you've got fear coming. You know, people that are our brothers and sisters are being killed in the streets, and it's sad. And things are happening in Portland that just, you know, bring tears to my eyes. And these are not people that I've met, but it's sad. And, you know, what's going on with COVID right now, right, is really sad. And sometimes I'm angry about it. And my point about saying that is to let my inner child know, well, of course you feel that way. How else could you, right? And I think that my relationship with my inner child and cultivating that relationship is about the notion that it's my job to tend to her. Nobody sat her down to say, honey, it's awful that you watched your sister get punched in the face. That's awful. That's for me. Means to build a relationship based on the five A's, right? Attention, affection, appreciation, acceptance, and allowing, right? Those five A's are any relationship, right? And this concept of putting down the perfectionism, putting down the not good enough, letting myself know, oh, I blew that one. I made a mistake. Yeah, that happens. I do that because I'm a human. We get to do that, right? Letting myself off the hook of the family story that is, you know, unacceptable. So, you know, the gifts in terms of my hope for the future, the gifts that I got from recovery are really quite plentiful. And, you know, one of the examples that I use a lot because it really tells my story well is it used to be that if my boss called me in my office and said, hey, could you come by my office and see me? I have a really deep abandonment fear. And so my instant inclination was, I am so fired. And that happened for years. I've been working for the same company for 23 years, and they've promoted me several times. And I like to think that I'm valued there. And but my point is, my story from my past is I'm going to get kicked out. I have that story around relationships. I have that story around jobs. And I have to be careful what I say to myself because I can manifest that story. So what I do now, what I used to do is get really freaked out, walk down the hallway, walk in and go, what's going on? What's going on? And I would try to deflect whatever they have to say. Let me figure out how to say that it's not me. It's not me. Right. Mm-hmm. But now what I do is when my boss calls me and I pick up the phone, I put down the phone and I hold my left hand and I let my inner child know, yeah, that is scary, isn't it? That's uncomfortable that, you know, it feels like we're going to get fired. So how about we bring higher power with us? We're going to go walk down that hallway. We're going to find out what the rest of the story is. And then we're going to do the next indicated thing. And it's okay to feel scared. And I walk down that hallway and I walk in and my boss says something about, oh, I want to just ask this question. Because as I say, I've been at the same company for 23 years and haven't gotten fired yet. And so I walk in with this sense of fear, but it's a fear that's wrapped with my arms around it, with my higher power's arms around me and with me around my, so, you know, I've had this question before. I've been in recovery for 10 years and people have said to me, does it get better? And I said, I think not only does it get better, but I get better tools. I have better, more functional coping strategies than I've ever had before. And that's entirely because of the tools that I get from recovery, from meetings, from spending time with my inner child, from letting her know that I hear her, from tending to her, right? It's so interesting that I spent so much time looking for a relationship I could fix because I couldn't have fixed what happened in my childhood between myself and my family of origin. And the real relationship I needed to work on was with me. It's always been an inside job. It's always been about having a relationship with little Nance, because from that is born the ability to have relationships outwardly, right? When she's happy about things, I want to acknowledge that. And when she's sad or upset, today was a bit of a hard day for a number, but I'm trying to be careful to manage the amount of news I'm watching. But for my job, I actually do need to pay attention. So, you know, I'm trying to tend. I had a therapist coin that phrase some years ago, to tend. How were you tended to as a child? You know, that I actually call it a syndrome. The youngest of five syndrome is this sense of, we don't need your opinion. Get in the car. We've already decided what we're doing and where we're going. You don't need to have a voice. So part of my job in tending to little Nance is to say to her, you absolutely get to have a voice, and your voice matters, and what you think and feel matters. And because of that, as a loving parent, right? And I believe in the coin in my pocket deeply, right? It says on it, this is a spiritual program of action coming from love, right? Coming from love. And so when I tend to myself in a sense that is about compassion and kindness and acceptance, when somebody shows up in my life with an issue, I can offer that holding space for them too. It's a practice that, you know, we practice these principles in all our affairs, is really the way I'm trying to do my life. I don't do it perfectly. I really got to work on my humility some more. And I still have those eruptions of perfectionism, like, oh, I really wish I had, you know, and then I forgive myself. Mm-hmm. Because that's the deal in recovery, right? It's part of the human journey. That's the way it's going to go. I'm not going to do it perfectly. And it's important to know that so that I can let myself off the hook, because I can really be. One other thing I wanted to offer, because it's my favorite passage in the Red Book, and it's something that helped me kind of have a target for how to do my life, and it's on page Roman numerals 24. It's written by Claude. Let me leave you with these thoughts as you make your journey through these steps. Listen to your inner child, not with fear, but with openness. Love this child for all she or he has had to defend against. Know that feelings are to be listened to. They are cues and signals that indicate where you are and what you need. Mistakes are a sign of growing. Remember, be gentle with yourself. Recovery is accepting yourself for who you are, no longer waiting for others to define you or approve of you. It is safe to take time to play today. Play fuels your creativity, tickles your inner child, and nurtures your soul. May you respond with the vulnerability of your child, but with the strength of your adult. Surround yourself with people who respect and treat you well. In faith, one finds the strength to survive times of great fear and sadness. It's it's those words that help me. And sometimes when I get stuck, that's my reading. It helps to put a really important point on where I want to be and how I want to do my life with my inner child. I feel like I've locked up. You guys are locked up, aren't you? Anybody there?
I can still hear you.
You can still hear you.
Oh,
yeah, still
okay,
here.
You've all sort of left. Okay. Thank you for letting me share, and I hand it back with gratitude. Thanks.